One of the earliest things that we teach our children is how to take care of their teeth. We want them to have good dental hygiene because those teeth are very important. We think about them as far as nourishment is concerned and everything else, that without them, we're in a very difficult strait. Somewhere along the way, there's a group of dentists who came up with kind of a little slogan that said, prevent tooth decay. And so that became kind of the moniker for many dentists around the country, that they would have that in their offices. They would put that up to try to encourage it. And somewhere, someone came along and changed the words around just a little bit and said, we need to prevent truth decay. And I think that's a pretty good change, don't you? As we look at what men do to the truth, we understand that with very, very little effort, decay can set in. And before we know it, what we find is the truth very much changed. The decay of truth is nothing new. We can look back to the earliest of times to see where men took the idea of truth and they began to abandon that idea and they began to add to that idea to the point that it became hardly recognizable. And so since the subject is not very new, what I've got to say this morning is not very new either. I'm going to talk about things that I think we all know. But yet in the country in which we live, in the times in which we live, truth is very much under attack. The idea of a standard, the idea of being right, is very much questioned. And the way society goes many times, Christianity will go if we're not awfully careful. And so this morning I want to remind us of some very fundamental ideas to make sure that you and I are very much preventing truth decay. And as we begin our study this morning, I want us to actually go to a gospel that is very much dealing with the idea of truth. We know that truth is found throughout the Bible. God's insistence that truth be the standard is found in every place we can go. But if we look at the highest concentration of passages that deal with the idea of truth, we're going to find them in the Gospel of John. Some 28 different times, the concept of truth by term truth is going to be identified. And so this morning, as we begin our approach to the truth, I want us to look at one of the places where that word comes up, and it's actually in dealing with Pilate. Here is this very pagan, very worldly governor appointed by the Roman Empire to this backwoods district of Judea who is now put in a situation where he must judge Jesus Christ. And as he's listening, he understands that this man is quite different from the ones who are usually there. And as Jesus is speaking to him about the concept of truth, Pilate says, I imagine rather flippantly, what is truth? I don't know if the gospel writer John had this in mind when he included all of these passages on truth or not. But I believe in many ways John answers that question in his gospel. And the short-term answer to that question is God is truth. Shorthand, rather, answer. Where we could just simply say if we combine all of these ideas together, the answer to Pilate's question, very simply put, is God. What is truth? God is truth. Now let's elaborate on that a bit. As we consider the answer to the question, I believe we find Jesus Christ Himself identifying the source of truth. In His high priestly prayer that He prays in John chapter 17, He prays to the Father and He says to them, sanctify them in your truth. What? Your word is truth. So here's Jesus Christ Himself answering. When He says, when we want to find truth, we look to God's Word. We look to what God has to say. But the gospel writer doesn't stop there. He continues on, and he's going to bring out that the Father has made the truth known in Jesus Christ, His Son. And I want us to consider several facets of that because, first of all, we know that Jesus accepted that mission. That as the Father voluntarily asked the Son to voluntarily come to earth to present the truth, Jesus says, I'll do it. We think about in chapter 14 and verse 6, where Jesus said to him, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. That's a bold statement. Here Jesus Christ is saying, if you want to know what the truth is, you look to me. I am the truth. And then he elaborates on that idea. Not only do we find him very boldly accepting that, we also find him saying that he is the fullness of the truth. The gospel writer John is going to bring that out at the very beginning of his gospel in chapter 1 and verse 14 when he says, "And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of what? Full of grace and full of truth." There's no dishonesty in Jesus Christ. There's no substandard in Jesus Christ. Everything about him bespeaks truth. And so then it's no surprise to us that if he is full of truth, he then is the source of that truth. If you and I are looking for the right answer, that's where we go. Again, listen to what we find in the gospel. Two passages. Chapter 1, verse 17, and chapter 18, the latter part of verse 37. Listen to what's said about this. Jesus himself speaking says, "The law was given through Moses, but loving favor and truth came through Jesus Christ." And then where he speaks, he says, "I came to speak about the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice." In a world that says, kind of as Pilate did, "What is truth?" And Jesus says, "It's what I say. It's the words that I speak." And so no surprise to us as well when we find that everything Jesus said, he says, "I'm telling you the truth." Listen to these passages of Jesus where he makes that statement. He says in chapter 8 and verse 40 to the Jews, "But now you seek to kill me, a man who has told you the truth that I heard from God." Where did he say truth originated? With the Father. The Father delivered that truth to the Son. Jesus says, "This is what I've told you, the truth from God." He continues on. And he also says in chapter 8, verses 45 and 46, "But because I tell you the truth, you do not believe me. Which one of you convicts me of sin? If I tell the truth, why do you not believe me?" And one other we might note as we look to chapter 16 and verse 7. Pilate said to him, "So you are a king?" Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world, to bear witness to what? To bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice." Jesus says over and over, "When you hear my words, you can trust them. When you hear my words, I'm telling you what's right." So Jesus not only accepts his mission and shows himself full of truth and the source of truth and one who tells the truth, we also know that he says there's another who's coming, who's going to tell you the truth. "Just as I have told you all of these things," he tells his apostles, "I'm going to ask my Father to send the Helper to come, and the Helper will come, and what will he do?" Listen to what John says as he quotes Jesus. "When the Helper comes, whom I will send to you from the Father, the Spirit of truth who proceeds from the Father, he will bear witness about me." The Spirit of truth. Here is one who is another helper who comes to deliver this. Listen as well as what we find in chapter 16 and verse 13. When Jesus says, "When the Spirit of truth comes, he will guide you into all the truth. For he will not speak on his own authority, but whatever he hears, he will speak, and he will declare to you the things that are to come." So what are we finding? We're finding that the Spirit will bring truth. Now what's going to happen? As the Son speaks the truth, and as the Spirit speaks the truth, we're going to find that the apostles will learn the truth. Isn't that what Jesus told them when he said, "For I have given them the words that you gave me, and they have received them and have come to know the truth that I came from you, and they have believed that you sent me. Going back to the prayer that Jesus prayed to the Father, he says, they have been given the truth. And so what does that mean? It means they were sanctified in the truth. And for their sake, I consecrate myself that they may also be sanctified, set apart in the truth. John himself bears witness to that. When he writes this, he who saw it has borne witness, his testimony is true, and he knows that he is telling the truth, that you may also believe. Here's one of those apostles who, as he's speaking about the truth, says, you can believe me. But now where does this then lead? As the Father is the source of truth, and truth is spoken by Jesus, the Son, and by the Spirit to the apostles, it is through the apostles then that you and I come to know the truth. This message that's given by the Father, this message that's brought by the Son, that's delivered to the apostles by the Spirit, the apostles have made known to us. And just think about a couple of ideas that that means for us. As Jesus was speaking to the Jews who had believed in Him, He said, if you abide in My Word, you are truly My disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Let me tell you, that's the truth you and I have, that has come from the Father, through the Son and Spirit, to the apostles, to us. That is the truth that can set us free, and none other. And it's the truth that tells us how to approach God. Jesus said, but the hour is coming and now is here when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for the Father is seeking such people to worship Him. God is spirit, and those who worship Him must worship in spirit and what? And in truth. How do we know? It's through our apostles. You see, those 12 apostles weren't just for the people of the first century. They are our apostles as well. They are telling us through this word that's been delivered what the truth is all about, and that's how we then know. But John brings out another point. He says, I also want you to understand that there are those who are opposed to the truth, those who are trying to lead you in the wrong way. And he makes no fact but that Jesus, that the devil himself is the one who seeks to destroy the truth. He says in chapter 8 and verse 44, you are of your father the devil, and your will is to do your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks out of his own character, for he is a liar and the father of lies. So Pilate says, what is truth? And the gospel writer John says, it's what comes through the Father, through the Son, through the Spirit, to the apostles, to us. And it has nothing to do with the one who would seek to destroy that truth. God alone is the source of truth. Now, with that being said, we live in a time that's seeking to destroy it. In fact, it's very interesting that we can go all the way back in ancient times to the time of Israel under the judges, and we can see a clear picture of 21st century society. You remember way back when the judges were ruling in Israel, as one man said, was in the Wild West days of their history? Throughout the book, the writer says, the people did what was right in their own eyes. That's postmodernism. So ancient times very much gives us a picture of what postmodern society looks like. And you and I need to be very well aware that there are those in our day who have the same attitude, that truth is whatever is right in your own eyes. Two words that we oftentimes hear today that ought to sound very opposite of each other, but are used collectively, are the words inclusion and diversity. Those of you who are in the education field, I know you have heard those words. You probably had classes on those words. It's ideas that have been brought in that we want to include everyone, no matter how diverse their backgrounds may be. That may be fine in some areas, but when it comes to truth, these two words do not belong. These two words must not be accepted as a standard for truth. Because here's what happens. We look back to the Reformation movement, and what we find at that time is an explosion in Protestant denominations. There are all kinds of people who are leaving the Catholic Church in that era, and they're going and starting these various religions. And so what we find kind of coalescing over the next 400 years or so are all of these groups who are placing their claim on Christianity, who are saying that they have the standard of truth. But yet what we find is that all of those ideas are very much opposite of each other. So what's happened? Rather than saying, well, we've got to get to the source of the truth, and we've got to look at all of these ideas, and we've got to figure out who's right and who's wrong, instead, what we have said is, and I'm using we in the terms of society, let's just take them all. And what we'll do is we'll include all of them together. And what a beautiful picture that will present of people who are seeking their Lord in all of these different ways. No. That's not right. That's not truth. And in our very postmodern culture, we've taken it a step further and we've said, let's accept all religions. If you want to follow Allah, do it. If you want to follow Buddha, do it. If you want to follow Jesus Christ, do it. Because what a beautiful picture of all of these ideas that are leading us all to the same place. No, that is not right. Because that is opposed to the truth, to the standard that was given by the Father, to the Son, to the Spirit, to the apostles, to us. We need to understand that if we are going to prevent truth decay, it means understanding that truth is exclusive. Truth, by its very nature, is going to eliminate everything else. Consider some of the earliest commands. The first one that we know about, do not eat of this tree. What did that truth do? When God said, you are not allowed to eat of that tree, it excluded this tree from being a source of food. When we look at the Ten Commandments, there are to be no other gods before me. That excluded every other god that could be brought in. Now what happened when Israel became postmodern and they accepted Baal and the Asherahs and Dagon? Did God say, my, what a beautiful picture of people who are exercising their religion? No, God didn't say that. In fact, God oftentimes spoke with the hand of punishment on them because He had delivered the truth to them and they chose to go in the opposite direction from that truth. We understand in the passage that we just read, worship is to be done in spirit and in truth. That means there's a standard. That means that God has said, this is how it's to be done. I want us to understand also that as we think about preventing truth decay, we understand that there's no room for diversity. I'm not saying there about our backgrounds. We have very diverse backgrounds, don't we? We may come from poor homes, we may come from rich homes, we may be black, we may be white, we may be Mexican, we may be American, male, female, all kinds of diverse backgrounds. That's not what I'm talking about. Within truth, there's no room for diversity. And let me illustrate what I mean by that. Look with me over to Ephesians chapter 4. This is the consummate passage, isn't it, on unity, on the idea that we are not diverse in ideas of truth. Listen to what the apostle writes. I therefore, a prisoner of the Lord, urge you to walk in the manner worthy of your calling in which you have been called, with all humility and gentleness and patience, bearing with one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit. Okay, keep that in mind. Eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace. There is one body and one Spirit, just as you were called in one hope that belongs to your call. One Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is above all and through all and in you all. I don't mean to make light of anyone by the statement I'm about to make. But I could take that passage to a kindergarten class and I could read it and I could say, boys and girls, what word stands out? And in unison, I would hear the word one. That's exactly how the apostle wants us to read that. When we talk about the truth, it is not a smorgasbord. It's not a cafeteria style where we can say, this is a beautiful idea, and this is a wonderful idea, and this is a great idea. And we come with our blended idea of the truth. The Lord says, I have delivered the truth to you. This is it, and there is nothing else in it. There is no diversity, and there is no inclusion of these diverse ideas to say that whatever is okay. So what then is that unity of the Spirit that the Apostle Paul talks about? It is truth. It is the standard that's been given. A second cause of truth decay that we find is a rather interesting idea. It's the idea of pragmatism. Pragmatism is kind of like a giant octopus. It's got its tentacles in every field you can find. You'll read about it in education. You'll read about it in psychology. You'll read about it in religion, as well as a host of other ideas. And you start reading some of the pragmatists who have come along, it'll make your head hurt when you start reading everything they've got to say. So let me just boil it down to their main idea. They say that pragmatism demands that whatever works is what you go with to achieve your outcome. Whatever is going to be successful, pursue that idea. And if you pursue that idea and you get your desired result, everything will be fine. This idea is very prevalent in what has become known as the mega church movement. There are a lot of people who have kind of abandoned the idea of denominationalism that we talked about with inclusion and diversity. And they've said, we want to get in these non-denominational groups. Oddly, these non-denominational groups all look alike. But what they say is, we want to pursue the idea that we're all trying to get to the same place, and we can do this in a very pragmatic way. Listen to this quote. It's kind of a take on a quote. It's not the exact one, but this came from George Barna. If you're familiar with Barna, he does lots of religious research, lots of surveys. In fact, from time to time, we'll get a call here from the Barna group that's trying to get some kind of survey underway. This says, George Barna advises that churches tone down any emphasis on the objective truth of Christian doctrine, because postmoderns have short attention spans and they are only interested in their own felt needs. That's pragmatism. That's kind of an insult, isn't it? It says we've kind of got a goldfish mentality. We can't keep anything in our heads for very long. But what is in our heads, we're really only concerned about us. Let me give you another illustration of this. Joel and Victoria Osteen have kind of made a religious empire out of the mega church movement. You'll see Joel Osteen interviewed quite often. And his sister Victoria is interviewed quite often. I could not believe what I heard spoken. And I just want to quote her here. Listen carefully. She said this, I just want to encourage every one of us to realize when we obey God, we're not doing it for God. I mean, that's one way to look at it. We're doing it for ourselves. Because God takes pleasure when we're happy. That's the thing that gives Him the greatest joy. So I want you to know this morning, just do good for your own self. Do good because God wants you to be happy. When you come to church, when you worship Him, you're not doing it for God, really. You're doing it for yourself. Because that's what makes God happy. I saw a video of that, and someone had posted on the end a splice from the old Cosby show where Bill Cosby said, "That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard." And I must agree. Listen to what she's saying. We're here this morning for us because it makes us feel good, because it makes us happy, and we can leave God out of the picture because, after all, God's happy if we are. Anybody want to find that in the Bible for me? Anybody want to look through the book of Psalms and find that with all of the instructions on worship? Anybody find a passage in the New Testament that bears that out at all? No. And so what is the prevention of this? It is the realization that truth demands a standard. You cannot have truth without a standard. And that's why the Apostle Paul said to Timothy, all Scripture is breathed out, is inspired by God, and is profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction, and for training in righteousness, that the man of God may be complete, equipped for every good work. There is nothing left out of that. The Apostle says truth is the standard. It is not up to us to determine what is truth. It is up to us to accept that truth. And that leads us then to really what may kind of sum up all of these ideas when we think about truth decay, and it's the idea of acceptance. I don't know if we realize how much that is being pressured on us today. Because what those who seek to decay the truth are doing is to say and to get us to believe truth is in the eye of the beholder. Because there is no standard of truth, therefore, since there's no standard of truth, all of us have our own ideas of truth, and therefore anybody's truth must be accepted. Since there's no real standard out there, I can have my view of truth, and you can have your view of truth, and he can have his view of truth, and she can have her view of truth, and we can all just get along and accept each other, because how are we going to debate it if there is no standard to which we can all compare ourselves? I fear sometimes of sounding like a broken record, but I must say once again my disappointment in what I've seen out of the morality of our nation this past week. When our U.S. Supreme Court said, we're not going to take a case about homosexuality, and in their indecision they said, if you want to overturn the laws against it, you go right ahead. And so in a course of one decade, 10 years, we have gone from one state that recognized homosexual unions to now over 30. Those of us who believe that there is a standard of morality now are very much in the minority. We're coming to terms with what the world has faced for most of its existence. And we better be prepared for that. You see, truth is not about acceptance. Truth is about accepting the truth. And so, how do we prevent it? And this may sound a little shocking to our very calm and smooth culture, but it's in confrontation. That's what Jesus said. I want you to note his words in Luke chapter 6 when he said, woe to you when all people speak well of you, for so their fathers did to the false prophets. We better be careful if everybody's telling us how enlightened we are, what a modern view we have of things, because Jesus is saying that is not the way it's going to be if you take a stand for truth. Look with me back to the Gospel of John to chapter 6. John chapter 6. And as we look down to verse 60, listen to this confrontation. The Lord Himself, the one who's doing the confronting. It says, when many of His disciples heard it, they said, "This is a hard saying. Who can listen to it?" Jesus, knowing in Himself that His disciples were grumbling about this, said to them, "Do you take offense at this? Then what if you were to see the Son of Man ascending to where He was before? It is the Spirit who gives life. The flesh is no help at all. The words that I have spoken to you are spirit and life. But there are some of you who do not believe." For Jesus knew from the beginning who those were who did not believe and who it was who would betray Him. And He said, "This is why I told you that no one comes to Me unless he is granted to him by the Father." After this, many of His disciples turned back and no longer walked with Him. Jesus confronted, and He said, "If you are on My side, you are on the side of truth." And that's the side you and I must be on as well. Confrontation is where we are not going to give in. I am no prophet, but my guess is that within the lifetime of most who are sitting here this morning, this church, the Gooch Lane Church, will be pressured to accept a lie. I don't know if that pressure is going to come from society as a whole, if it will come down as a government action on us or what, but I think in the lifetime, if the world keeps spinning, this church will be put in that position. My question is, what are we going to do? Whether we're here or at another congregation that's being pressured in that way, what's going to happen to us? So in answer to that question, and as we wrap up our thoughts, let me just make two admonitions for us. First of all, don't cave. So many times when the pressure begins to be applied, that's when we really begin to see our weakness. And it may very well be that we are tempted by Satan to accept these ideas of non-truth that are presented to us as truth, and to allow those things to disorient us and to get us off track. And that's exactly what our adversary desires. He seeks to distort and he seeks to disorient. What did the Apostle Paul say? He says, even Satan himself disguises himself as an angel of light. And he's going to come in the form of all of these lies, and he's going to make us sound so out of touch and so non-urbane in our views and so backwoods and so old-fashioned. And there will be people who will cave to that, Christians who will cave to that. I heard a comparison one time that has stuck with me for a number of years. The speaker was saying Satan's a whole lot like an alligator. If you know anything about an alligator, what he seeks to do is to get his prey in his mouth and then head for the water. Because if he can make it to the water, what he'll begin to do is to spin and roll. And the purpose of that is to get his prey so disoriented and so confused that there is no possible way of escape. Well, let me tell you something. This old alligator does it also. If he can ever get us within his clutches, he's going to seek to get us so confused and so far from the truth, it'll be hard to ever find our way back. So the moral of that story is, don't leave. Stay in the protective hands of God. And let me make one other admonition. Let's practice what we know. So many times we can amen ideas like this, but yet what we must do is to put it in very practical application, that when we have times and occasions and opportunities to stand for the truth, that is exactly what we do. I don't know what will happen. It may cost us a job. It may one day even land us in jail. But we do it. We practice what we know. And we remember the words of James when he said, whoever knows to do the right thing to do and fails to do it, to him is a sin. We don't give in and we don't give up. And we preach these things whenever the opportunity arises. and we understand above anything else that there is a standard of truth that has been delivered from the throne of God. And that is the standard with which we must live every day of our lives.